Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today is September 29th, and this is episode number 396, and we actually have a very special guest set of guests today. We actually have a end customer of Microsoft who is using Azure to do some really neat stuff within the renewable energy world. So before we get to them, Sujit, Kale, you want to, it looks like you both put some news out here.
Yeah, I'll jump in there first. I got a few things, three links here today. The first one's around data governance. For those who don't know, I can't remember if we did a podcast about this yet. I'll have to go back and look, but on Azure Purview.
We did. Yeah, we had one of the PMs on before at GA.
Nice. I couldn't remember. We've had so many here.
It's only 395 other shows. Kale, I mean, I don't know why you can't remember every single one.
Exactly, right? But anyway, it's a data governance solution for listeners who might not be aware, which allows you to basically kind of tag data and be able to handle, you know, data classification and automated data discovery and things like that in your enterprise. Super powerful service, you know, because as solutions start to get more complex, you know, with different databases, blockchains, I always have to mention blockchains as part of the podcast, you know, all kinds of different data sources in your enterprise, you need to be able to tag those so that they can be recognized and data appropriately handled so you don't leak information. And also you have your proper policies for how you're handling those kind of things, both from a regulatory legal perspective, but also maybe your business processes. So very good post out here about Azure Purview, some of the next steps that's going with that product, and a lot of like getting started. So for those who might not be aware of it or have used it before, there's some MS Learn modules out here, their community site and whatnot. So good thing to kind of brush up on and see what's going on there, because it's super important in the enterprise world today. Second one I have is one I typically do here every now and then, which is around the Azure cost management and billing updates. I always bring these up because, you know, customers love these things, because it's basically around like ways to help you control your Azure spend. And so there's been enhancements that keep continuing going on in that framework to make it easier for you to discover things. There's like new kind of views that they keep creating, that basically it's around like slicing and dicing the data around like what's going on in your Azure tenant, so that you can help control, you know, costs and things like that in your enterprise. So I won't go into the details about it, but there's a bunch of new things in there. There's a ton of links in here about like new ways and how to save money based on whether you're using storage or machine learning, things like that. And there's also a bunch of videos and links to learning stuff in there. So take a look at that. Super cool stuff. And the last one I had, this is a little different because usually I'm talking about some sort of product or feature or something, but I found this article, which was really cool. And it was about building a digital guide dog for, you know, train for railway passengers who have impaired vision. And it was basically talking through a scenario of like how you would go about building this and some of the technology that's used there that's evolved over the years. Obviously, things like Azure machine learning being a key part of that. But there's a bunch of other like pieces you might not have like thought about there, right? There's some emerging tech that's happened. There's one called YOLO, which I thought was hilarious, but it's a you only look once. It's kind of an object detection classification thing. So there's always kind of emerging things that are happening there in that space from research as well as from the product side. So I just thought this was a really cool kind of, I don't know if it's a case study, but it's kind of like walking you through how you would go about building something like that simply. So for those who are doing hackathons or are interested in this stuff, a lot of good links in here around that type of technology, object detection and whatnot. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yep.
So
yeah, I got a couple in the IoT space, keeping with our theme with our guest today. So FreeRTOS is pretty popular, like a mini operating system that IoT devices have. used, but connecting them to Azure IoT has typically meant doing some custom work to plug them, and they don't really connect directly. And so by using this thing called a piece of middleware that Azure IoT provides for FreeRTOS, these devices can seamlessly plug into Azure IoT Hub to send telemetry, get managed, be managed remotely, things like that. And so that is now available as GA. It's actually an open source project on GitHub, and so we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Another one also in the IoT space is Azure Sphere. We haven't talked about that in a while, but they've been constantly updating their operating system to keep in touch with the current Linux versions. And so the newest version of the RTOS, the Azure Sphere OS, is updated for Linux 5.10.60. And there's a bunch of other updates, including how it does crash handling in case the system hangs, for example. So those are the updates from me, Evan. Over cool. to you.
Great. Yeah. So actually, at this point, let's go over to our guests. So for those of you who are, listeners to the podcast, which everybody hearing this should be, click the subscribe button. We had Connor Kelly on the show, a number of months back to talk about how Azure IoT solutions were enabling the renewable energy market. And one of the end customers that we talked about was Vattenfall. And so Connor was nice enough to put us in touch with the folks at Vattenfall. And so we've got Marcus Mellon and Mikhail Soderstrom today to talk about, who Vattenfall is, what they're doing with Azure and what they're doing with renewable energy. So, Mikhail, Marcus, can you guys introduce yourselves and tell us what you do at Vattenfall?
Yeah, sure. So, I'm Marcus Mellin. I was fortunate enough to work with Connor there. With that,
we'll go with fortunate. Didn't he defend himself?
Yeah. Well, it was a compliment. He's a good guy to work with, but we've been working on this kind of solution that lets you really kind of track your renewable electricity use down to the hour as a new annual level. And I can explain that more in detail. But that's where we worked with Connor, and we also worked with Microsoft. Take a little bit step back, of course. Microsoft and Vattenfall has worked together in a number of different areas. Kind of one thing is all of the Azure things we're doing, and also then on the renewable energy side, actually. So I'm part again of the Vattenfall's electricity sales organization, focusing on the Nordics. So that's my geographical focus. Mikael?
Yes, Mikael Söderström. So I have 15 years at Vattenfall. I started in the integration area, building integration platforms. And then I started to 2015-16 building the IoT platform that we have today. So I'm tech lead designer, or whatever the boss calls me, for the IoT platform. But I do most of the stuff there and consider myself have kind of good knowledge on when it comes to hardware, sensors, gateways, and how the solution should look like.
So Mikhail, you've actually, you've been doing this long enough that you've sort of seen the transition in this market to, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. IoT wasn't even really a thing. I mean, you had sensors and they were potentially tied into the network, but it really wasn't as broad as it is now. And there certainly weren't the cloud services that you tie into. What has that change meant for what you can build or what you can design?
Yeah. Unfortunately, back at that, when we started the IoT stuff, Microsoft didn't have any good provisioning solutions. So you didn't have any, Microsoft didn't have any any device management tool, so to say. I mean, today you have good things with IoT Edge and provisioning services and image repository and so on, but that was not existing at that time. So we are still using a third-party tool for that.
Okay.
I mean, as I said, 2015, then you basically had to build your sensor yourself by using Arduino stuff or the DB1840 or whatever 1820 sensors and reading it with the SPI bus and convert it to some JSON object and send it somewhere. Nowadays you can basically off the shelf at that electronic store by sensor. You can even buy it on Alibaba or Wish or whatever. You can get a Modbus sensor for a few bucks, basically. So yeah, the market is really changing, absolutely. And I mean, now narrowband IoT is making its approach to the market. You have Sigfox, you have LoRaWAN, for example, and all that stuff. But when it comes to Sigfox and LoRa, there's not really that many manufacturers that's doing this sensors that directly talk LoRa or directly talk Sigfox. Sigfox has been around for a while, but when it comes to LoRa, the market is basically in the startup of creating this mass industry of sensors. Now,
hey, Mikael, just for the sake of our listeners, can you elaborate on some of those terms you just used? You used terms like LoRa and Sigfox. I'm not sure if I got it. And could you just maybe elaborate on that? Just what is that specifically in the IoT space?
Yeah, so Sigfox, for example, that's a kind of a global network where you actually, off the shelf, you buy a sensor, let's say a climate sensor, that is have a unique ID, and it transmits the readings over the air via radio, 433, 869, or whatever it is, megahertz, to some global receiver. So it ends up in the global concentrated Sigfox server, basically, probably a cloud solution. But anyway, so, and at that point, you can tell Sigfox, your account at Sigfox, tell it that, hey, every message should be sent to my IoT hub. And then we get the messages to the IoT hub. And then it's this standard procedure with Azure Functions, data lake, SQL Server, stream analytics, or whatever we are using. And LoRa is kind of the same thing. There is a global LoRa wide area network with radio traffic also. And you can do basically the same thing. The interesting part with LoRa is actually that you can buy your LoRa gateway receiver. So you can, on your premise, receive your own radio transmitted messages from your sensors. And then we installed a Chirp Stack on one of our gateways. Chirp Stack is a freeware where you actually can configure it to receive the messages, actually embed messages from the LoRa gateway over a cabled network, for example. And then the Chirp Stack in the original configuration puts it on an MQTT broker, and you can have your gateway reading the MQTT broker and broadcast the messages to the IoT hub. That's basically these two versions. And all of these devices are basically, they are battery powered. So a Sigfox sensor can live sending climate information every 30 minutes. You have the battery uptime for 5, 6, 7 years.
Years.
So it's really low power devices. And it's the same for LoRa devices, for example.
So you guys put these sensors on, I guess, the energy producing sources, you know, solar, I guess maybe wind, and you're sending the data back into, you know, in through IoT hub. And then, you know, you mentioned you're using, you know, functions or whatever. But what does Azure really enable you to do that, say, you couldn't do, you know, 10 years ago? Or is it really the typical story of, hey, I just don't have to manage the infrastructure. I don't have to create the hub. I don't have to create the aggregation point. How does that really, what's the benefit that it brings to Vattenfall?
I think it's a little bit of what you say. It's a simplicity. I mean, I don't really need to care. I just right click, create, and I have my data aggregator, for example. You can route it to different IoT hubs, event hubs. You can create your serverless code running in Azure Function. You have trigger functionalities. You have timers. You have all of these artifacts in Azure make it so easy to handle the streaming data. of course, you could have been sitting down and writing some C application, multi-threaded thingy to do this also, but I don't want to do that. So it's basically it's the simplicity, and you have everything in one place, and you have full transparency with DevOps, and just publish whatever you create, and you can even debug it on your laptop, this Azure Functions, for example. And no, I'm really a fan of Azure, I must say.
You know, one of the things that we've heard a lot about IoT is that the devices should be secure, so that they should be tamper-proof, you know, so that somebody just can't steal it and maybe take advantage of what's on there. And they should be able to remotely be managed properly. So in this scenario that you just explained, where it's more like connected through a low power radio, so how do you ensure that the device is A, secure? Like, what do you have on the device, and B, how do you manage it remotely?
Yeah, the Sigfox devices and LoRa devices you actually do not manage. They are like off the shelf or in the box, so to say. And you have to trust Sigfox. I mean, Vattenfall did a security review of Sigfox and are doing it from a LoRa perspective, but we did change the approach from LoRa, so we put our own LoRa gateway. So we are actually a LoRa provider also in that sense. So from a LoRa perspective, we are safe because we have the sensors locked in our premises, power station or whatever it is. And even the gateway is locked in and the LoRa gateway, I meant. And our gateway that in this case run Node and on top of Ubuntu core, we are running Node and we are running JavaScript as an application layer. And then we actually have a Yocto image where everything this is built on. And we have using the TPM chip to actually validate the image. So you cannot, it's a secure boot, and you cannot put anything on it because it will not boot, basically. And security is actually, that's the top. That's the first thing that we discuss when we create anything, because you have read all about the ransomware, and the food chain Coop was out for more than a week in Sweden, and so on. So, and since Vattenfall is one of the key players on the Sweden electricity market, we need to have our safe, that's for sure. So, So security is the first thing that we look into. And then, of course, classification of the data. I mean, climate data at a hydro station, that is kind of public information. You can get it from any weather service. But when it comes to production and load on substations and that kind of stuff, then it's more of critical data. So our platform is now classified for CAAT 333. So we can run secret data, but we cannot run NSI data, National Security Information data, because that is not allowed to leave Vattenfall, Sweden's border, and so on. So I'm satisfied because we can run secure data. We can run data in a secure way, for sure.
What? So I've got solar panels at my house, and so we generate it. You know, we generate power, and it goes back into the grid to the local utility. If you know, let's say I was, you know, living somewhere in the Nordic states, right? And Vattenfall is in that market. How does Vattenfall come into the picture for me as a consumer? Am I, you know, are you guys putting panels on my roof? Are you putting the monitoring? Like, where does Vattenfall come into that picture?
Yeah, we can put panels on your roof if you pay for them. For sure.
Yes, I am still paying for them.
Yeah, it is. We can come in several ways. We can kind of install the panels, but also we can kind of supply the power that comes from more distant sources like wind, hydro stations.
Oh, so I would actually get power from, basically, you would be my utility in that.
Context. We have our own productions. We have our productions with again hydropower, wind power. nuclear as well.
Don't forget nuclear. No, but in I mean a scenario, for example, in the IoT sphere for you as a B2C customer would be that you have solar panels, you have battery storage in the solar, 10 kilowatt maybe, and you have an EV charging pole outside for your EV car, and you have some kind of heating pump, air or whatever. Yeah. So if we connect all these devices to our gateway, we have a controller running on the gateway on the edge that actually can start and stop your heat pump, for example. It can talk to the EV station telling it, yeah, now the house consumption is too high. You can only charge with your lowest amperes, 5 amps, for example. And so we don't blow your main fuse. That's basically one case, fuse protection. And the other case is that, yeah, we via machine learning, we learn that you always leave your home 6:45 in the weekdays, and you probably never go before 9 in weekends. Yeah. So then we have another service that we see to that your car is charged 6:45, but we choose the hours you will be charged your car, which means that we will pick the cheapest hour, the coming 24 hours, to charge your car. So I mean, and you can admit in this service, you have to agree to that your in-house temperature can vary from 22 to 20, for example. And then we take care and even run your heat pump the best hours to keep it in these intervals, of course. And then, of course, you have a panic button on your phone saying, hey, I want to charge fully now. I don't care what it costs. I want to have heating now. I don't care what it costs, and so on. And then then you basically take the responsibility for your fuse.
So I signed up for, you know, on my thermostat, I got an email from my utility that said, hey, we're integrated with your thermostat company. You know, we can sort of make sure that we pre-cool cool the house when it's cheapest to cool it. You know, I live in the Southeast in the United States, so it gets quite hot in the summer. So that's the scenario that Vattenfall would come into play. Is you're controlling it so that I'm still getting what I need, cooling, my car's charged, but you're optimizing it so that I pay the least.
Yes.
At the end of the day. Okay. Yep. Gotcha.
That's one scenario. Yes. So you raised your hand, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Thank you. In this regard, I'm just curious. What do you use? What services do you use in Azure to enable some of these features that you just talked about? You mentioned you're running, doing machine learning, et cetera. So I'm just curious what kind of services you use in Azure to enable those things.
Oh, yeah. Just to count them up, I mean, IT Hub, Event Hub, Event Grid, you have functions, you have Data Lake, Azure SQL Server. Really a few virtual machines because they are constantly hacked until you as soon as you start them, or at least try to be hacked. We have started to use Azure provisioning service for the things that are running on IoT Edge, and we also have a concept for nested IoT Edge in place. And that's basically the most common things we are using. Data Lake, did I say that? Yeah.
That's great. Thank you for that.
And then to talk a little bit about what Conor O'Kelly pointed out is that when you produce a wind kilowatt hour or a hydro kilowatt hour, you actually create a certificate called Guarantee of Origin. So a company can actually buy them and claim that they are only living on green energy. But we took it a bit further together with Connor and Marcus then. So should I go on, Marcus, or could you take a little bit about the case?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's essentially, I mean, everybody wants to use renewable energy in order to make sure that we actually decarbonize the grid. But the way you buy renewable energy at the moment, there is a standard way of doing that. And it's kind of a little bit of simplifications. When you're on a shared grid, of course, you can't kind of chase electrons down that grid, right? So you have to use something else. And the agreed method of doing that is kind of check totals at maybe longer time periods, maybe at the end of the year. And that's a good start. But that also just gives you kind of the total for the end of the year. That's like looking at the total of your loved one with only one pixel, right? So it doesn't really show you kind of what happens with the production and what happens with consumption in the meantime. So that's a bit of a problem if you're, for example, using solar, again, to back to your house. If it's, you know, at least in the Nordics, it's not going to be much sun out in the wintertime, and there's going to at least be less sun at nighttime. So am I really using solar all of the time? And so the solution essentially just gives you the transparency. And also, since we have different power sources, you can kind of combine it to really make it 100% renewable every hour. So that's a cool thing that Connor was referring to.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, because that, you know, from Vattenfall, but at, you know, in June, in the summer, in the day, I'm getting it from solar, but in the winter, you know, I'm getting it, you know, at night, I'm getting it from wind somewhere else. And it's, you're just sort of aggregating. Okay, that's great. No, that's awesome. Yeah, definitely, you know, sort of reducing the carbon footprint and, you know, leveraging all this cool technology. It's a great combination at that point. Any last thoughts that you want to leave the audience with? Mikhail or Marcus? Mikhail, you're on mute.
Yeah, I was correct. no, I mean, I just shortly can explain what we did with this carbon stuff. So we didn't put up energy meters at Microsoft's office in Stockholm, the head office, where we knew the consumption there. And we did an integration towards our system where we get the production figures from the wind parks and from the hydro stations. And in the agreement with Vattenfall, Microsoft is allowed to use wind park X, for example, and hydro station Y. Yeah. So we do in real time, we actually combine these figures on minute level, and then we aggregate it on hourly level. So we are showing it in a dashboard with hourly aggregations. So you have a green consumption pattern for when you can buy wind, and we top it with blue if the wind is not enough. And that is running on a big screen at the Microsoft office in Stockholm.
Blue being hydro.
I need that picture in my office here as well. That'd be a great display to see there.
I will send it to you.
This is great. You know, Kale, Sajid, any last questions? Okay, awesome.
No, this is great. Thank you.
Marcus, Mikhail, thank you very much for coming on and talking about the cool work that Vattenfall does, you know, as well as the ways that y'all are leveraging Azure. This is a great, you know, addition to the overall story, you know, around renewables and around the cloud. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, folks.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, folks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.